We are doing Tanya 200, the 200th year of the printing, the publication of the Tanya. In speaking about the soul and distinguishing the soul from the inclination, that we have two complete souls rather than two inclinations, we need to have more information about what a soul is and how a soul functions. And so the Rebbe describes the godly soul first. The soul has 10 faculties which reflect the 10 divine attributes with which God creates the world, divine attributes, because the soul's faculties actually devolve from the divine attributes. As everything in the world, everything in creation, devolves from something in godliness. The 10 divine attributes are described in Kabbalah and are divided into two categories. The first category is called mothers, and the second is called children. The category of mothers are three faculties, or three attributes, called Chochma, Bina, and Das. The first letters of the word spell the word Chabad, and this is where the title Chabad comes from, that describes Lubavitch Chassidus as Chabad Chassidus. Chochma, Bina, Das. These are the mothers. And then there are the seven days of creation that are called the children. These are the emotions, kindness, severity, etc. In the soul, the 10 faculties are also divided into these two categories, the parent and the child. The parent faculties are intellectual faculties, three faculties of the mind, and then seven emotional faculties of the heart. The reason that the mind is called the mothers or the parents is because the emotions of the soul are born out of the intellect, out of the Chachma, the Bina, and the Das. Now, Chachma means the intelligence, the native intelligence of the soul, the soul's capacity to grasp an idea, to discover an idea, to get excited about an idea. That's Chochma. Bina is the mind's ability to develop an idea, to investigate an idea, and to draw more information out of a little bit of information that the Chochma discovered. So the Bina is actually the true mother that develops and fleshes out an idea that Chochma initiated or inspired. When a person dwells on what he knows about God's greatness, he thinks about the fact that God fills the universe like a soul fills a body, or he contemplates the fact that God transcends the world and surrounds the world because he is bigger than his creation, or he contemplates the fact that creation is so insignificant and so completely transparent to God that it practically doesn't exist at all in God's presence. Only God exists. In considering these three greatnesses of God, the heart will respond first with a fear and an awe of God, a response to God's greatness, and then, with further contemplation, the heart will respond with a great love for God and a longing and a desire to get closer to God. And this comes out of the understanding, out of the mental faculties. As they connect to God, so do the emotions. And this explains the various expressions in the Psalms and the Tehillim where King David describes his thirst for God. In one verse, David HaMelech says, "My soul thirsts for the courtyard of godliness." In another verse, he says, "My soul thirsts to you, O God." And in a third verse, King David says, "My soul thirsts for Elohim," for God. These three distinct kinds of yearning are referring to the three different contemplations. If one contemplates and understands how God fills the world, that everything in this world is basically an expression of godliness, that creates a desire and a thirst where the person wants to get closer to God, and it describes the courtyard of God, the world being God's courtyard, since we recognize the presence of God in everything. But if a person contemplates the fact that God transcends the world, that God is the origins of the world, but is much greater than the world itself, then the thirst is described in the second verse, where King David says, "My soul thirsts to Elohim," because it is through the title Elohim that God creates the world. Bereshis bara Elohim. In the beginning, God created, and it uses the name Elohim. So here the thirst is for that part of God which is not present in the world, which is not available in creation, which transcends creation, and therefore the thirst is also a transcendent thirst. You want something more than the world can provide. If, on the other hand, the person contemplates the complete insignificance that the world is missing, the significance that it's missing, which makes it very insignificant. If we think about how insignificant the world is in God's presence, then it produces the third kind of thirst, and that is, "My soul thirsts to you," God himself, not any particular name of God. Which is why the Rebbe in the third chapter of Tanya quotes all three psalms that describe the three different kinds of thirsting. Now, of the three mental faculties, the Rebbe gives more attention, devotes a good portion of the chapter to the third mental quality. Chachma, we said, means the native intelligence of the soul that can discover an idea or grasp an idea. Bina means that part of the brain that develops the idea, that fleshes out the idea, that gives it structure, that gives it depth. But then there's the das, the third mental faculty. The third mental faculty, the Rebbe says, is the strong attachment to the subject which we are understanding and grasping. And concerning the parenting effect, the Chachma is the father and the Bina is the mother. What is the role of the Das? The Rebbe says that if an emotion is generated by the Chachma and the Bina itself, the emotion created will be a fleeting emotion and not a true lasting emotion. It will not be a viable emotion. Without the Das, without that strong and deep connection of the mind to the idea, the emotion born from the mind will be an imaginary one, an unstable emotion, not the real thing. So das is what provides the stability, the permanence, and the energy in the emotion. Without the das, the emotion is shallow and fleeting. So das means when the mind not only understands the idea, but identifies with the idea, takes it personally, connects with the idea. One of the ways of understanding das is that when a person quotes a wise statement, you know that it has not yet become part of his das because he's still quoting. Which means he read this brilliant thing, it really appealed to him, he understands it, he thinks it's wonderful, he's quoting it. So it's a great idea, but it's not his idea. This is not the way he thinks, this is something he heard that impressed him. Which means it is a new idea. Das would be when a person has studied an idea, absorbed an idea, and has become so identified with the idea that he's no longer quoting it. It's the way it is. This is how he perceives reality. And so he'll tell you this wisdom without sounding like he's quoting something. This has become his way of thinking. Now, the consequence of that is, if you quote a brilliant idea, there will be eventually a time when you will forget the idea. It'll slip your mind. Because it's not you. Where there is das, when you've connected and identified with an idea, you'll never forget that idea. Because it's not a memory. It is you. It has become one with you. And that's why das is often associated with oneness. The biblical knowing. Adam knew Eve and she conceived a child. This becoming one is described in Torah with the word das. This kind of mental connection that makes you one with the subject that you're studying. The result is that the emotions born from the study, out of the study, will also have a permanence. It will be you, not merely or simply a feeling that went through you, past you, a feeling you had, but is now gone. That's called a fleeting emotion. That's called an untrue emotion. It's not the real thing. So das is what gives the emotion its permanence, its stability, and its deeper energy. Another way of describing das, and we see this quite often in our experience, there are children who are brilliant, gifted, special children, precocious children. Their chokhmah is very alert. They pick up ideas, they grasp ideas very quickly. Their bina is very developed. They understand the implications of an idea, the consequences of an idea, the ramifications. They can elaborate on an idea, they can expound on an idea. Their bina is well developed. And yet, they're immature. They're childlike. And therefore, irresponsible. Das would then be the mature dimension of the mind. And that comes with age, usually. The maturity of the mind is where the mind can identify, the mind can own an idea. The mind can become one with the idea, and then the person has permanently been changed. And every teacher knows and can tell when he teaches his lesson, and you see the look in the child's eye, and you know that brilliant kid got the idea, he understands, he's excited, he's thrilled, he's ready to go on to the next idea. He's impatient. This is a child with chachma. The other student, you can tell by looking in their eyes, by the look on their face, you can tell that they're intrigued. You've got their attention. They want to know more. They want to know what happens in unusual circumstances. How does this idea apply? And they have all sorts of possibilities of variations on the theme that they want to explore. Those are the kids with the bina. But then there is that really special student where the teacher delivers the idea, the lesson, and the look on the child's face tells you the child has realized the implications of this idea, and the child is changed. He will never be the same again. He is now matured. You've taken him into a whole nother realm of reality. The child comes away from the lesson, comes away from the classroom, a wiser child, not just smarter. So we might say that Das is true wisdom. And wisdom means maturity. Wisdom means identifying. Wisdom means this is me we're talking about. This lesson applies to my life, and I am now a different kind of person. But all of this is going on in the head. It affects the heart. And it will affect the heart in proportionately to what's going on in the brain. If the brain is excited with chachma, you will have an emotion that is bright, exciting, fleeting. If the mind is the bina mind, then you will have a more developed emotion, a more complex emotion, but also not permanent. If the mind is functioning and focusing on the das of the intelligence, then the emotion born from that will be a permanent maturing emotion, and the person has been changed for the better. Since we're talking about the godly soul, we're assuming that it's for the better. In the animal soul, in the natural soul, it may be the opposite. And so, the emotions that are born out of intelligence, out of chokhmah, bina, das, out of the Chabad, in the godly soul, is a fear of God and a love of God. Those are the primary emotions, but there are five others. Only here, for the sake of brevity, the Alter Rebbe simply says, love and its branches, fear and its branches. Because love and fear are the essential emotions, the others are combinations or permutations of these primary love and fear emotions. We mentioned that in the animal soul, the element of fire produces arrogance and boast and anger, because these are emotions that rise, and fire rises. Here, describing the emotions of the godly soul, the Rebbe says that the thirsting that a person feels, the desire to get closer to God, that comes from the fire element of the godly soul. So in the natural soul, fire produces anger and arrogance. In the godly soul, the fire produces thirst. A thirsting, a yearning for that which you love, comes not from the love itself, because love itself is not so intense. Love is pleasant rather than intense. The intensity, the yearning and the thirsting comes from the element of fire. Fire makes you thirsty. Because like the flame that is constantly struggling, fighting to rise, to get away from the wick or whatever it is that it's burning, that yearning, that desire to be elsewhere, that's what produces the thirsting in the godly soul. So the godly fire of the godly soul produces yearning. The water of the godly soul produces a more pleasant kind of love, which is described in the Song of Songs as a love like water. Then there's the love described in the Song of Songs as a love like fire. The difference being that love like water is where you feel close already and you enjoy the closeness. So it's a calm love, a pleasant love. That's more like the love between brother and sister, between parent and child, where the closeness always was. You're of the same flesh and blood. And so the love between a brother and sister should be, and by nature is, a very pleasant, a very calm, and a very steady kind of love. Interruptions in the relationship does not enhance the relationship. The fire love, the love that is more of a yearning and a thirsting, describes the love between a husband and wife, between a bride and groom, whose closeness is not given. They weren't born related. They weren't born close. They are overcoming a natural distance, a natural foreignness. Firstly, because they're not of the same family, but secondly, because they're from different planets. They're male and female. And so this love is a fiery love. It is intensified by the distance that separates them. The love that is appropriate between a brother and sister is inappropriate between a husband and wife. It's too calm. It's too steady. It's not responding to the natural distance between them. The love of a husband and wife, of a bride and groom, experienced by brother and sister, is also inappropriate. It's too stormy. It's too intense. It's too fiery for that relationship. So different kinds of love are appropriate in different kinds of relationships. With God, we find that we sometimes refer to God as our Father, and we are His children. That's referring to a pleasant kind of love when we feel that God is close, that God is always there, God is always available, we are a piece of God, and so that part of our soul experiences a love like water that flows pleasantly, constantly, uninterrupted. But then there's also the relationship that we have with God as creator and creation, where we are naturally distanced from each other. Creator and creation are infinitely removed, infinitely distant, and yet we overcome that distance, like a husband and wife. And in overcoming that distance, we attain a love that is more intense, more fiery, more dramatic than the love of a parent and child. And that love is described as the fiery love. Love like fire. And what is the love like fire? It's a feeling that what I want and what I love is distant from me. And so the love turns to a yearning. It turns to a thirst. Thirst meaning what I need is not available. I need water and it's far away. So we thirst. When we have an understanding of God's greatness, it will naturally produce a fiery love. Because in thinking about God's greatness, we're focusing on the distance between ourselves and God. God is great, I am not. God is infinite, I'm finite. I'm keenly aware of the distance that separates us. God is forever, and we are temporary. God is true, and we fake it most of the time. God is holy, and we are unholy. God is forgiving, and we don't forgive, etc., etc., etc. So we're becoming more and more aware of how God, who is the source of our life, is distant from our lives. Not that he is unconcerned, but he is different. And that difference causes us to yearn for a closeness that we don't have. It causes us to thirst for a closeness that is not easily available. On the other hand, when we contemplate God's kindness, when we contemplate how close God is, how involved God is, how no place is devoid of him, and every quality, every existence in the world is a reflection of his presence and of his influence, if we understand that closeness, the emotion, the love born out of that understanding will be a more pleasant, a more calm, a more water-like kind of love. We're not reaching across a distance. We're not trying for that which is unavailable. On the contrary, we are very comfortable and very pleased with the closeness that exists, with God's presence and God's availability to us at every time and at any time. That creates a more child-father or father-child kind of love, which is a steady and pleasant one. And that's why between husband and wife, in the fiery kind of love, absence may make the heart grow fonder. Because when do you yearn for something more than when it's not close, when it's distant, when it's unavailable? So the yearning and the thirsting kind of love is intensified by distance, by absence. But the father-child kind of love is not intensified by absence or by distance. There is pain, not an intensified love. And so we see that in the function of the soul, the three intellectual faculties are the parenting faculties that give birth to a proportionate and to a complementary kind of emotion. When you have all three faculties, the Chachma, the Bina, and the Das, focused on one subject, then the emotion born from that understanding will be a three-dimensional emotion, a deep emotion, a lasting emotion, a true emotion.